Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Guter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar. Oh!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 2. As we head into the first round of the DFB Pokal, we were granted with an incredibly tense, drama-filled match day full of controversial decisions, which we'll go through later, stoppage time goals, and so much more. We thank you for joining us wherever you're listening to around the planet. I'm your host, Matthew Karagic, and we are going to get started in a moment. To help me discuss all of the action from match day 2 is German football expert and writer for the Bundesliga fanatic, Lewis Ostrowski. Lewis, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while since we've had you on. How are things?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Matt, I can't think when I was on this before. I can't remember how long ago that was. But yeah, it's back. And I think this is the first time I've done it with just you.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Yes, it is. I think it was like 2021 during like the COVID season. It may have been, or 2020. One of those two seasons we definitely had you on. When Osnabrück were in the league, that I can think of off the top of my head. And we'll talk about VfL Osnabrück in part 2, but we'll start with one of the promoted sides in part 1, SV Elversberg, who had their first home game. I say home in inverted commas, because they were playing in Saarbrücken's home stadium, the Ludwigsparkstadion, which is just down the road. They welcomed Hansa Rostock on Saturday afternoon, and the 8,731 fans who attended the game probably didn't expect the spectacle that they received. It was a tight game, plenty of good football played by both sides, and Carlos Sickinger, who should have had a penalty last week, hit the crossbar in this game. He opened the scoring from another set piece. The ball coming into the box from Ruckout. Initial header was stopped by Nico Neidhart, and Sickinger put it in for the 1-0. The carnage really happened at the 90. A interesting penalty given against Sarpreet Singh. Ruckout took the penalty, but it was saved. Fahir, who was again very industrious throughout this contest, his effort goes in, but he encroached. Thus, the goal was disallowed. And then it really kicked off, because Hansa got it going. And in the 100th minute, 90 plus 10, substitute one Jose Pereira, who'd only been with the team for just 2 days after signing on loan from VfB Stuttgart, he scores. And then 3 minutes later, he wins it for Rostock. Hansa, the Rostock fans who made the long journey down south to the Saarland, leave with all 3 points. They're one of two sides that have claimed maximum points and are the league leaders heading into the Pokal week. Lewis, this game was absolutely crazy. The highlights don't even do it justice. There was good football by both sides. Again, impressed by Elversberg in the way that they've really adapted to this league. But the one thing that sticks out to me is from their opening two games of the season, to only have 1 point feels really disappointing, because they've played a lot better than their results have suggested.
Yeah, they should have won this one, especially not just with the penalty chance to wrap it up, but then they had another chance after that in injury time when it was still 1-0. I think it was Boyambo who then missed. And, you know, he scores that, they probably win 2-0, everything's fine. Same thing last week, you know, they were 2-0 up and they didn't manage to win. But to be fair, Hansa, you know, stuck Hinterseer up front, whacked the ball to him a couple times. It worked. I think he got the assist for the first, and I think didn't get the assist on the second because it was a defender headed it to Pereira. But he's up there causing trouble. And then Pereira, I mean, it's a perfect debut, really, isn't it? I mean, 2 goals as a substitute in injury time. Fair play.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, because it was in many ways, if you look at what the Stuttgart circles were talking about, it was the battle of the loanees, because you got Fahir on the other side, and again, really, you know, really dangerous in those areas. And he also could have had at least a couple of goals in this game, but ultimately they leave with nothing heading into their cup game against Mainz on Saturday. But yeah, Rostock have been a bit of a surprise. They They weathered the pressing storm last week against Nuremberg. They were very efficient when they got their chances going forward. And in this game, you know, they really brought the heat late in the contest. They also had some good chances early on through Kai Pruger. But yeah, as you said, Lewis, they chucked Hinters there on. They went a bit more direct in the way that they were playing. And, you know, the substitutes really worked. When they brought Singh and Pereira on, they were just a little bit more damaging up forward. They had those great opportunities. And ultimately, you know, to maximize your outcome against two teams that, you know, some might say that you should probably win, job done. And, you know, their fixtures coming up, FSV Frankfurt in the Cup, Hannover and Osnabrück both at home. They'll see both of those games as very winnable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite interested to see in general how they do this season, because they ended last year really quite well. And, you know, the guys that they've brought in are quite interesting, because I think I said before, there's a lot of them that are guys that, I think there's five guys who were relegated last year. Mm. They're all players that have been really good before, but haven't actually done much in the last year or so. So it's you know, if they all come together, Hansa Rostock could be a really good side. And I mean, so far they've won both games. Maybe they're a bit lucky in both of them, so I don't know how much to really read into it, but you know, they got the job done.
Yeah, sometimes they say it's better to be lucky than good, and the stats back that up. That, you know, Elversberg were very commanding, but ultimately they leave with nothing. Let's move to yesterday's top game, Karlsruhe and Hamburg at the Wildparkstadion. This was a fantastic watch in front of 33,000. It's the first Zweite Bundesliga game at the fully constructed Wildpark. So it obviously caught me by surprise when you're so used to watching the Karlsruhe Ultras on the left of picture, going to the left of screen, moving to the right. But that's a nothing thing. Anyway, what was good about this game is that Karlsruhe were really up for the battle. They've had this stranglehold over Tim Walter and over Hamburg for quite some time. And they opened the scoring. It was brilliant football all around. Stindl finding Philipp Heiser on the left-hand side. Vanitek making that nice dummy run. And it falls to Fabian Schleusner. And he has a very easy finish to make it 1-0. Hamburg did wake up in the second half. They made some substitutions. Jean-Luc Dompey was one of them. But it's been the two guys who have been fantastic in the last game. Laszlo Benesch, Robert Glatzel. They were the one who brought them back. And in front, Benesch gets the free kick goal on 61 minutes. It's a beautiful curler away from Patrick Drouet. And then on 65 minutes, Benesch assists Glatzel. Glatzel, it kind of looks like a deflection, but it was quite necessary, his effort. So 2-1, you're thinking Hamburg might win it, but the football gods had other ideas, because on the stroke of 90, Karlsruhe steal a point. Lars Stindl, with a delicate ball, lulls the defence to sleep, and Budu Zizhvatse, the Georgian international striker, with a brilliant finish, and Karlsruhe gets a point. I feel like the result's quite fair. It didn't feel right that Hamburg were going to win the game in terms of how the game had progressed. I thought Karlsruhe were doing a lot of interesting things with Vanitek, with Niebel, and I think that's quite positive for them. They've taken, you know, 4 points out of a possible six. I think they were a lot better than they were in Osnabrück. We've spoken about that last week. But yeah, I look really impressed with what Karlsruhe did in their home debut.
Yeah, I mean, I think that forward line with the guys, the midfield guys, Vanitek, Stindl especially, and the movement for the first goal was really good. And that's, you know, what caused it to kind of interchange between a few different guys. None of the Hamburg players really knew, I think, who to pick up, and then you end up with Schleusner just completely free. Yeah, I think they deserved a point. They were quite good. I mean, they tested Toya Fernandez a fair bit as well, but also Hamburg very much could have won the game, I thought, especially with that late Jatta miss, which, like in Elversberg, you know, you just think, if he puts that away, it's probably quite comfortable. But he doesn't, and then, you know, you get what you deserve when you miss chances like that, I suppose, and Karlsruhe come back and equalise.
Yeah, and look, they they obviously the game got a lot opened up late in the second half as Karlsruhe were throwing the kitchen sink, and you know Dompe had chance as well. But ultimately, you know, I really like what Karlsruhe did. They didn't really allow Hamburg to play their game. You know, it was a good performance. I was actually really impressed, and I think for a few of us, you know, they're a team that we're convinced that we should look out for throughout the season. Now we'll see if they can maintain the level. But there was a lot of positives in the way they played. They really forced Hamburg to defend, and we saw, you know, Dennis Hadzukadunic. We are going to get that one. Hadzukadunic. Yeah, Dennis Hadzukadunic. He was teetering on the brink of potentially being sent off. He had that incident in the first half where I think it was Rossmann was about to cross halfway and he tucks him and, you know, wasn't given. And yeah, you can tell for Hamburg, the thing that sticks out to me is they really miss Sebastian Schonlau. And, you know, even though Ambrosius was a better fit with Hadzukadunic, compared to Ramos, it still feels like that defense is rather incomplete. And the first two games, you know, giving up 5 goals does show that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just the centre-backs as well, but it's the fact that Haier's been playing on the left because Muheim wasn't fully fit. And also, I mean, there still might be more players coming in at Hamburg as well. But, and obviously, they're missing Rice as well, which I think is huge. And, but yeah, Benes was very good again. I think you said he was probably their best player, I think, in these first two games. I've been really impressed with him. And then, really, yeah, Karlsruhe were the better team probably for maybe until Hamburg's goal, but I think that's more about Karlsruhe being good than Hamburg not being at it, because even though they've got a few maybe things they could improve, they're still, I think, they were still a pretty good team, and I think both teams played pretty well.
Yeah, I think ultimately a fair result, a really good game of football. Karlsruhe are going to be at Saarbrücken in the Cup on Friday night. Hamburg travel to Rot-Weiss Essen on Sunday afternoon. Let's head to the capital, Hertha Berlin against Wien Wiesbaden in front of just over 40,000 on a Friday evening. That really turned it on for the weather. Hertha wanting to be better than they were in their defeat to Fortuna Düsseldorf. Wiesbaden coming off that 1-1 draw against Magdeburg. This game was really just unbelievable, really, in the fact that Hertha statistically were far superior than Wien Wiesbaden, but they just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net, much like they couldn't do in Düsseldorf. They had good moments. I really liked the substitutions of Haris Tabakovic, who came on for Niederlechner, who was injured. Same with Previlak as well, was quite good. But they couldn't find the goal. And as time progressed, when you have such control as they did, although, you know, Wiesbaden had their chances, Lee had that open goal in the first half that he missed, something's got to give. And it did give in stoppage time in the 92nd minute. The corner comes in. It's not cleared. Lasse Günther just has a lash. Oliver Christensen clearly not really thinking there's going to be a shot. It cannons off the first post, it cannons off the far post, and into the back of the net. The old-fashioned double doink, but unlike the double doink with the Chicago Bears, this one counts. Wiesbaden steals all 3 points. Some would say they've conquered the capital, and they get their first win in returning to the Zweite Bundesliga. There's so many storylines, because there's a lot that's come out last night. There was the report from Bild, take that with a grain of salt, that there's a bunch of players who are asking for an exit. It seems like Oliver Christensen, who we've mentioned, is on his way to Fiorentina. We had doubts about this team. There's obviously going to be a bit more happening with the transfer window, but this is not the start Hertha would have dreamt up. Especially, they would have chalked this game up as a potential win to be pointless. One of three teams to yet to secure a point, and the only team in the division to yet to score. That is a very worrying sign for the opening two games.
Yeah, and to be fair to Hertha, I thought they were... I think they were better than they were against Düsseldorf, at least in the second half. Mm. I mean, Wiesbaden were probably better in the first half, but second half, Hertha created a lot more than they had against Düsseldorf. They just just couldn't put it in. I mean, Tepekovic hit the bar with this kind of strange volley from a throw-in. Just maybe didn't get many clear chances. But Wiesbaden defended quite well and countered quite well. And, you know, it could have gone either way. Got the goal. It's a bit embarrassing, obviously, for Hertha because they're so much bigger than Wiesbaden as a club. And, you know, you would expect them to win. Wiesbaden were quite good. So it's easy to you know, make fun of Hertha, but it wasn't an easy game. And to be fair, I think Wiesbaden actually, last time they were in the league, they beat Stuttgart home and away. And Stuttgart went on to win the league, I think. So it's not the end of the world. They definitely need a midfielder, Hertha, because that is what they're trying to get. I think who knows if Diego Demme's going to end up coming or not. The problem is, if they get someone in, are they going to then lose Richter or someone else? Christensen probably, but they've kind of already replaced him, although that's already gone wrong with Gersbeck off-field situation, which is just quite funny, really, as long as you're not a Hertha fan. It's unfortunate, and I mean, obviously, it's bad for them that they've got to play Hamburg in their next league game, which means they could quite easily lose their first three, and, you know, they might not score in that one either. But I felt a bit more encouraged about Hertha than I was after watching the Dusseldorf game, which might sound a bit strange, I suppose, given they lost. But I did think they were a bit better.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, like they certainly were a bit more active in the final third. The 21 shots on attempts on goal does show that they were very willing to get forward. And, you know, there was a lot more. There was still plenty of action with Fabian Riza down the left-hand side. They really mixed up their attacks quite well. We saw Jonjo Kenny, who, you know, whether he's going to be there at the end of the window, we don't know. But lots of attack. You know, they really diversified their avenues to goal. But ultimately, you know, you can win all the statistical categories you want, but the only statistical category that actually matters is the scoreline. And ultimately, at the end of the day, Wiesbaden, it may be considered a lucky punch, as they say in German, but you know, ultimately, they put the ball in the back of the net. There's no argument about it. They, you know, they took their chance when it mattered, and you know, they're feeling really good about themselves as a promoted side to beat a team that has far more financial capacity than they do, this gigantic amphitheatre of football. And, you know, we're going to learn very quickly that, you know, we're only two games in, and we make this mistake of, you know, well, oh boy, there's two games, you know, they're in real trouble. Just like watching, like, some of the games in the Drittliga where, like, teams that come down, they lose, and you're like, oh boy, here they go again. So we're going to give it time. We need to know what this squad's going to look like at the end of the window. And we'll see. And, you know, whether it's going to be Pal Dardai as coach, who knows? I mean, I think we've seen this story before. He's done it twice, where he's been a coach and he's been let go, and then he's come back and he's let go. And I don't know. We'll see. Their cup game is at Carl Zeiss Jena on Saturday, so not a particularly long journey. Wiesbaden would be playing RB Leipzig, but RB Leipzig are playing in the Super Cup on Sunday, so that game has been rescheduled to, I think it's like the 27th of September. So we've got to wait for that one. But they've got Karlsruhe in the league when they return. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll break down our Group 2 games, starting with the top spiel at the Velsens Arena. It's Schalke and Kaiserslautern. Two sides who succumbed to first round defeats were Schalke and Kaiserslautern. They got the top billing on match day 2 as they did head-to-head at the Veltins Arena. Kaiserslautern, came out very positively. They had a really good chance through Marlon Richter, but former Kaiserslautern goalkeeper Marius Müller produced an outstanding save. Tell me if you've heard this story before. Over Jante Torodda. Yeah, we heard that quite a lot two seasons ago, and they were at it again on 13 minutes. An excellent free kick from Ovu Yan Kevin Kraus completely loses his bearings, and Simon Torrada salutes to his assistee for his second goal of the campaign. Kaiserslautern still produced efforts on goal. You know, Ake was quite industrious up the top. Same with Tobias Reichel. But they got unstuck towards the end of the first half. It was a long clearance from Marius Müller. No communication between the defence and Andreas Luther. And Uwe Jan beats the offside trap. Luther panics. Luther brings Uwe Jan down. It's a terrible challenge. Studs up. Immediate red card by referee Harm Osmers. Down to 10 men they go. Then, in the second half, they were down to 9 men when Boris Tomiak fouled Cedric Brunner. An unnecessary foul in 57 minutes. He already had the yellow card booking. Maybe they should have taken him off. Not a coach, so I don't know, but maybe that might have been the safer option. Anyway, he gets his marching orders. Kaiserslautern down to 9 men. Schalke did get a second goal on the 70th minute through Keenan Karaman. A little bit of a mistake from Kral in goal, but he was quite serviceable in the replace of Luther. Karaman puts it in, and then Karaman assisted Brian Lasma, who absolutely lashed one, and he got his first goal for Schalke. The funny thing about this game, for mine, was I don't think Schalke were particularly good. And Kaiserslautern, even with the man deficit, were still able to create chances, whether it was through open play or set-piece situations. Yes, they were a little bit stable with Timo Baumgartel in the starting lineup, but I wasn't particularly impressed with what Schalke produced, despite winning this game quite comfortably.
Yeah, I mean, Schalke were okay. You know, they won 3-0, so you can't judge them too harshly, but obviously it was a very different game to most will be, because Kaiserslautern went down to 9 men, and I mean, it was pretty much unforced. It was entirely on Kaiserslautern that once they went down to 9 men, yeah, Schalke were obviously very dominant, and then they got 2 goals. The second one from Lasme was with a really nice goal, and you know, I mean, Schalke fans will hope he does that a lot. I wouldn't get your hopes up, but I quite like Karaman as well in the whole game, so I think there's a bit of an attacking force developing, because I mean, they've got 3 goals in both their games.
Yeah, and that's quite positive for them to be in that situation where they're clearly scoring. It's just finding the best combination defensively. And look, they're going to figure that out throughout the season, depending on if they make any more signings during the window. They could definitely use another fullback because they're very lean. A lot of reliance on Brunner and Uwe Jan. But like, it wasn't terrible. The winning is the main bit. Is now you've got a platform to build on. You've got you win at home, which is always a good thing to do. But ultimately, you know, like, you would like, it's almost begrudging the fact they won 3-0, but, you know, they took their chances when they came and ultimately deserved to win. But I was quite impressed with the fight that Kaiserslautern showed throughout the game. And obviously being in a situation that they're not going to be used to, you know, I guess we'll see how they go. But, you know, one of the teams that have yet to pick up a point this season, it will be quite fascinating to see if they can turn that around. Kaiserslautern in the Cup, they've got Rot-Weiss Koblenz on Sunday. Schalke are heading to Eintracht Braunschweig before they play them again at the exact same stadium just 9 days later. Let's head to Kiel. Holstein Kiel welcomed Greuther Fürth on Saturday afternoon. Fürth coming off that 5-0 victory against Paderborn. Kiel squeezing past Braunschweig in stoppage time. Fürth were quite good in this game. They dominated proceedings for the majority of the affair, but they didn't score in the most conventional of fashions. Thomas Dana clearing after being told to come out by his defence. However, his clearance went straight to Branimir Goethe, who first times it from the edge of the touchline to the halfway line. Brilliant finish. 1-0, and it was definitely deserved at the time. But Kiel made some changes. They bringing in Lewis Holtby and Simo Kala, and the tide was turned. An excellent ball in to find Jonas Sterner gave Kiel the equaliser. And then on 70 minutes, Shuto Machino was fouled by goalkeeper Jonas Urbig, and Machino getting his first goal as a Kiel player, his celebration inspired by the anime Naruto. man of culture, that's for sure. You know, Furt progressed and they tried to get an equaliser, but luck was not on their side this time. Kiel winning this one, and they are one of two sides, the other being Hansa Rostock, as mentioned, to win both of their opening games of the season. I still think there was plenty of positives to take from for this game from Furt. They played very well, really good combinations up top. Lempoli seems to be a really good player for them, but ultimately, if we take the result on face value, that just that small period in the game where they gave up those two goals did them in the end.
Yeah, like you said, I think they were really good first half and they were unlucky not to be winning. Lempoli and Julian Green as well, I thought was really good again. Hit the bar as well, did Green. And they didn't manage to score. And then in the second half, the chances kind of dried up. And then suddenly Kiel just gave them a gift of a goal, really. And then very quickly turned it around with Holtby and Simakala. I'm very pleased to see Simakala doing well. And, I mean, he had a big part in it because he had a great dummy for the first goal. The cross went through his legs and straight through to Sterner, and then he set Machino through for the second goal when he was fouled by Urbich. So I was happy about that. I thought Furt were pretty good though, and they were a bit unlucky, but that's what happens. I mean, Kiel also quite impressive, so it's a fair result.
Yeah, we talk about you know, chance consolidation, you know, four of their nine shots were on target. You know, whereas Furt were very erratic in the sense that, you know, two of their 15 attempts on goal, you know, hit the target. So I think Zorniger will take a lot out of that game. They were quite, like, they're clearly showing that the mix that they've got and the players that they've brought in the summer are really integrating quite well. And the system that Zorniger wants to play, that very high intensity, lots of pressing, you know, playing quite centrally and getting the ball, you know, up to the likes of Zeeb and Lempele, getting, you know, the midfield group of like Hrgota and Green forward. I think the luxury of having someone like Wagner, who's been quite impressive in the opening two games, is he can sit deep in the hole, lets you know, Green to progress forward and be another attacking option. So they've got a really good midfield mix and potentially maybe a little bit underrated with how they went about it. But lots to like about what they did. I think, you know, their next game is, you know, Halle in the Cup, and then they've got St. Pauli, and they'll feel like they can win that game. They're a good match for them. So it'll be fascinating. Kiel, on the other hand, they have FC Gütersloh. I hope I didn't butcher that one, but I probably did. And then they've got Magdeburg when they return to the Zweite Bundesliga. Let's talk about Osnabrück. VfL Osnabrück were on the road on Friday night. They were the other game in that time slot. They took on Paderborn at the Home Deluxe Arena. Really fascinating game, this one. Paderborn, of course, were beaten 5-0 by the aforementioned Greuther Fürth. Osnabrück came from behind twice last time out, but fell short against Karlsruhe. Paderborn were very up for this game. They had plenty of good opportunities. Max Kruse was quite good in this game, but he didn't have the end result he would have hoped for. However, he did assist the first goal, the first and only goal for Paderborn. His excellent cross finding the leg, some part of the leg of Janis Hoyer, who redirected it past Lennart Grill. They probably should have had a second later in the half through Florent Moslier, but an excellent save by Lennart Grill denied Paderborn a second. Osnabrück were coming late in the second half, and they did get their goal 10 minutes from the end of normal time. An excellent corner wasn't cleared convincingly, and Florian Klein-Hansel, the left-back, with a right-footed shot, squeezing it through a nest of Paderborn players and into the back of the net. Both teams did try to get the game-winning goal, but neither was successful, and both sides get their first points of the season. I'll ask you about Osnabrück because they made a few changes from the team that was beaten against Karlsruhe. The one thing that was quite noticeable in their game against Karlsruhe was the probably disconnect between midfield and defence. It certainly seemed against Paderborn they were a bit more in sync, and I think a much more representative effort from what you would expect from them comparative to what they produced in the opener.
Yeah, I thought I thought the team competed quite well in both games, really. Obviously, with the red card with Iedini in the first game, he was missing, and that was something I was a bit concerned about. But his replacement, Henry Royce, played quite well, I thought, at right back. And then the left back, obviously, Kleinhansel got the goal. Still, I mean, Paderborn were, I'm sure, the better team. I know they had a ridiculous amount of the possession, but they weren't far and away better. It wasn't like we stole the result. And again, Lennart Krill played well in goal, which is great because, I mean, his selection is maybe not the most popular. I think lots of people want to at least start the season with Philip Kuhn, who's been the goalkeeper for the last few years and, you know, everyone likes. But Krill came in, didn't do great in the first game, made some great saves in this one. And, you know, I was pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, he was a lot sharper. You could definitely see that he started to get a bit more confident. We talk about goalkeepers that, you know, you have to play. Like, it's not a position where you can sit out, you know, seasons upon seasons and then just become the de facto number one. You know, Grill's only played 13 games in his last three seasons with Union and Bayer Leverkusen combined. So he's not exactly coming with a wealth of games, but he definitely looked a lot sharper. It was quite good to... The save on Muslia was superb because it had quite a lot of power from distance and he was just magnificent reflex. So look, that situation's going to be watched quite with interest. I think the other one is how they figure out that top three. They've clearly got a lot of decent attacking players. You know, we saw a bit of Christian Conte, Kwasi Reitz started this game. They've still got, you know, Mark Reedus. You've got the embers of John Verhoek as well as an offensive option. So how they integrate that will be quite interesting throughout the season. But what do you think Osnabrück's best offensive mix is under Schweinsteiger? Because obviously there's a lot of new players who have come in, you know, losing guys like Traore and we've mentioned Simakala. Do you think that there is a clear solution of what that front three should look like?
I don't think there is yet. I think one of the difficulties is it kind of did look, I think even if Osnabrück hadn't gone up, they'd have been looking for a new centre forward because Engelhardt is okay. I wouldn't expect him to start back much this season, so I'm a bit surprised that I think he's started both games. And to be fair, he played well against Karlsruhe. I don't really know how you fit everyone in with, you know, Conte, Makridis, and also Lars Kjell, who played, I think, on the wing against Karlsruhe. But that's kind of not his position, so it's like I'm quite excited by him, but I'm not sure that he's a great fit for how the team's playing at the minute. So it's hard to judge what the team should look like. I thought Veit was quite good against Karlsruhe, and then he didn't really do a whole lot in this game, having got the start, which I thought was probably the right decision. So it's hard to work out, really, but I think given time, we'll find out over the course of the season. I trust Schweinsteiger to get it right as well.
Yeah, and I've also got Noel Niemann, who I completely whiffed on. Paderborn are quite in a similar predicament here, but I think it might be a little bit clearer. They clearly want to play Kruse as the lone striker, have Conte and Muslia playing in behind. And I thought it's quite fascinating how they use Kruse, because he certainly seems a lot like... I'd almost be tempted to have him playing behind a strict number nine. We saw Felix Platter come on, but it worked to an extent. They were able to use him, being that he's, you know, a little bit bigger than he was previously, a bit more of a target man. He's quite good in the duels, and they're definitely a work in progress. They made five changes from that team that lost on the weekend with virtually a brand new defensive three. So we'll see how they go.
Yeah. Well,
you go.
Also the wing back Kurda, who I think was making his first start, who's just joined from, I think, fourth tier side. I can't remember who. He was I've not heard of him before, and he looked really good. He was quite impressive. Also, a cruiser, it helps that he didn't have to run so much because they weren't down to 10 men for the whole game. That's I think the main difference for him between last week.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, you mentioned Kuda, who yeah, I agree was very good. Yeah, Tierski, Balingen was where he was from. But yeah, he was quite impressive. Like they looked all right, but you know, let's see if they can build upon that in their cup game against Energie Cottbus on Saturday. Osnabrück will be hoping to cause the cup set when they've got FC Köln on Monday night. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games of Match 2 starting at the Millerntor when St. Pauli hosted Fortuna Düsseldorf. St. Pauli and Fortuna Düsseldorf both came off wins last week. St. Pauli, you know, getting a good result in Kaiserslautern, and Fortuna Düsseldorf getting past Hertha. The two met on Saturday afternoon, and this was a turgid affair. One for the goalkeeping purists, and one's for the fans of Jackson Irvine. Irvine was superb in this game, and he seemed the most likeliest of St. Pauli's attacking players, and I use that in commas, attacking players, because he had five of their 13 shots on goal in this game. The only person who was keeping Dusseldorf in the game for the most part was Florian Carstenmeyer. His goalkeeping performance was outstanding and helping Dusseldorf secure a 0-0 draw. It was going to be hard for St. Pauli late on when Karol Metz was sent off for a red card, which is such a clear red card. I don't understand why anyone would be refuting it. Studs up, miss the ball, take the player, straight red. Clear as day. This feels like a good result for Fortuna. For me, they were okay. It felt like St. Pauli were far more deadlier in the final third, but you know, it was a, I would say for St. Pauli, rather frustrating because they certainly had you know, the control of the game for the majority, but they just didn't make the most of their chances.
Yeah, I mean, Irvine could have had a hat trick. And to be fair to him, there was only one of them that was really a great chance that you'd think, okay, he should probably score. But he came close a few times with a couple other chances. And then in the second half, yeah, there was that one. He was one on one. And he did really well to get himself in that position, got past defender. He's one on one with Kastenmeier, and it's just close enough to him that Kastenmeier could reach it. And Kastenmeier, to be fair, did very well. He made a number of good saves, and there was only one time where St. Pauli almost scored, which was just a deflected cross that kind of wrong-footed him. But other than that, I don't think they could have beaten Kastenmeier.
Yeah, he was in great form. He really was up for the challenge, and yeah, I was yeah mightily impressed with his performance. Nikolai Vasil was quite good as well. He had that really good save on Felix Klaus with the very good set piece from Appelkamp. But yeah, I think you know ultimately both sides would be to an extent happy that they didn't drop the ball. But yeah, there's not really a whole lot to say. It was a game of up and back, but you know, it's like Pauli really should have made the most of their opportunities. And in the end of the day, you know, they've got some soul searching. The biggest thing that really came out of this is the need for to find out what their best three looks like up top. You know, we saw Afellay along with Szard and Metcalf, and whilst that fixed some of their solutions that they had regarding trying to figure out what that looks like. It feels like they might want to invest the 2.5 million that they got for Jakov Medic into another attacking player, someone who obviously fits Hertzler's system, but someone who can, you know, work with the likes of Szard, Metcalf, and Afellay. So it will be fascinating to see how they make that work, but ultimately they'll be disappointed that they didn't at least score once. Their cup game is against Atlas Delmenhorst on Saturday. Whereas Dusseldorf are making the journey to Illertissen, which will be an interesting encounter. Now let's head to the Max Morlock Stadion. It's Nuremberg against Hanover. Just over 30,000 made their way to a truly a dramatic game of football. It is not often we see two or more penalties in a game, but this one had three of them. Two of them for Hanover, both being scored by Cedric Toikat, who scored all three of his goals from the spot. The first one was a foul from Ioannis Gais on Nicola Trisoldi. Pretty clear penalty. The second one was a foul on Toikat by Lawrence. Ultimately given as a penalty. They should have made it three in the second half through Louis Schalp, who completely made a fool out of Christian Matenia, but his effort hit the post, and then Nürnberg got on the offensive. They got their goal on 66 minutes through Can Yılmaz Uzan, who is considered one of their better talents through the junior ranks. His goal was cool, calm, and collected an assist from Felix Lohkemper. And in stoppage time, they would get their equaliser when, well, this was the dubious moment of the match day. In real time, it looks like Breet Arai-Mbe, the centre-back for Hanover, fouls Daichi Hayashi. However, on replay, Hayashi is the one who steps on Arai-Mbe, and they both go to ground. Patrick Alts, the referee in this game, who was given a straight 6.0 score by Kicker, which is the worst score you can get. He went to the monitor to have a look and arrived at the decision of it's a penalty. Uzan again steps up and scores 2-2. Nürnberg almost thought they'd won it when Jan Jimmerer had headed home, but there was offside in the build-up, no goal. Final score is 2-2, and the stern-looking Stefan Leiter was furious that his team had dropped the ball. What an incredibly weird game this was. Hanover, for the most part, looked the more dominant. Nürnberg were just awful in the first half. They were booed off the pitch, and rightfully so. But better intensity in the second half. Very rare we see a four substitutions at halftime, but that was necessary to at least give Nürnberg a bit of a kick up the backside. Hanover will be really aggrieved that they were in many ways wronged. A really questionable penalty decision, and I think the one that frustrates a lot of people and why people don't like the video assistant referee is not only was the decision wrong, but then referee Patrick Alt had a look at it and proceeded to give the incorrect decision.
Yeah, he looked at it for 2 whole minutes and he still came up with, and I just can't understand what he thinks he's seen, because I mean, it was a perfectly reasonable mistake to make in normal time, and I have sympathy with him for that. And then he looks at it again and you think, oh, okay, yeah, that's another penalty, he'll overturn it, and then he doesn't overturn it. And I don't understand why not. I don't understand what he might be thinking. It's a big slice of luck for Nürnberg, obviously, who, I mean, I thought they improved in the second half when they, you know, they took off Valentini, Gais and Daferno and someone else at halftime. And I mean, those three, at least, they really deserved it. Lohkemper came on, did really well for the first goal. Uzun, I thought it was interesting that Uzun took the penalty as well. You know, it's a 17-year-old who's, you know, taking a penalty in injury time. And then I think he did some of the post-match interviews as well. So I found that interesting that he's, you know, kind of being treated like a senior player. But I suppose on that second half performance, at least he's better than most of them, if not all of them. So makes a bit of sense.
Yeah, the other player that was taken off at the break was Kanji Okunuki. And then James Lawrence was yanked on 62 minutes for Florian Hübner. Yeah, Uzan was mightily impressive in that midfield three. He was very active and looked very dangerous when they got him into attacking areas. Ultimately, yeah, I empathise. Like, look, refereeing is hard. Like, we acknowledge that here. You know, yeah. None of us are referees. We are all comfortable, you know, saying, hey, that this referee has made a mistake. And, you know, what the severity of this particular decision will bear, who knows? What I do know is that next week we won't even talk about it. It'll be in the past. It happened. You know, it's a bad decision. He would acknowledge that. And we move on. I mean, maybe we should be crediting Hayashi for some really good forward craft in drawing an incredible decision. You know, I think it's really difficult to even talk about it, because it at the end of the day, a lot of Hanover fans will say, hey, we were completely robbed of 3 points. But, you know, you gave them, if you give a team an avenue back, you know, which they did, you're going to get punished. And to be fair, this would have looked even worse had Jimmer's goal counted. And you would look at the situation and be like, how the hell did they lose that? They were a lot, what I will say for Hanover before we move on, they were much better than they were against Elversberg. Far more intensity. They pressed a lot harder. I think, you know, they had a better midfield mix with Kunsa alongside Christiansen. And they got the defensive three setting correct, in my opinion, with Orion Bay, Neumann, and Halstenberg. You know, they definitely was... It was just a better overall 11 that was far more cohesive than they were in their home opener. Question is, can they maintain that when they travel to Sandhausen on Friday? Nürnberg are at Oberneuland on Saturday. Our final game brings us to Magdeburg. Magdeburg hosting Eintracht Braunschweig in front of just over 28,000. Magdeburg were really up for it early, and they got their 2 goals in the first half. Baris Atik fanning Lucas Schüler, and then Atik again with the assist for Amari Conde. Jens Hartl's return to Magdeburg was not the homecoming he was hoping for. They did get a goal late through Anthony Uja, but essentially it was the last play of the game, and Braunschweig join Kaiserslautern and Hertha without a point this season. Magdeburg really were in control of this game for the majority of it, and it definitely seemed like they took their foot off the pedal late in the game, which did lead to the concession, which was, to be fair, a really poor bit of communication between Reimann and Lawrence. It's been okay for Magdeburg. I think they would be a little bit disappointed with what happened last week, but it was a very strong show of intent in their first home game of the season.
Yeah, I mean they won and they absolutely deserved it. I thought the midfield basically was really good. Conde and Atik especially, they created a few decent chances. Could have probably won a bit more comfortably. And then, I mean, obviously it didn't matter, but the goal they conceded was just very, very avoidable. Mm. And I imagine Christian Titz would be fuming with it, because Lawrence, I think he'd just come on as a sub not long before that. And then to do something like that, which, you know, if that happens a couple minutes beforehand, you've got a nervous last few minutes, which fortunately it was basically full time when that happened, and you know Magdeburg won comfortably anyway. But I mean, it was not great.
Yeah, it's interesting because he opted with Pacini over Lawrence to partner Daniel Eber in that attack, those two defensive centre back positions. And yeah, I thought that was good. But Pacini had this moment where he made this excellent tackle to deny a clear goal scoring opportunity for Braunschweig. But yeah, they're clearly trying to figure out what their best mix is. I like what they're doing. I think I was impressed with them last season. I like what they brought in. We got to see Alexander Nollenberger, who was from Bayreuth, and he had some pretty decent moments. The fact that their attacking three is so flexible, they had other options that they can bring on. We saw Elan Kuri for 6 odd minutes. You know, Ahmet Arslan, who was the top scorer in the Drittliga last campaign with Dresden, and Xavier Amiichi, who didn't get on in this one, but they've got such versatility. I think there's a lot to like with what they've got, and ultimately, you know, I guess we'll see how good they really are when they get against tougher competition. Now, they've got Jan Regensburg in the cup on Monday, but then they face Holstein Kiel and St. Pauli over the following weeks to end their August campaign. So we'll see if they are the real deal, or in fact, this is just a fad. Braunschweig have got the 2 games against Schalke. We've already talked about that. And then they are off to Karlsruhe to end their month of August. That's it from us. Thank you for joining us to discuss all the action from Matchday 2. We'll be back in a fortnight's time to discuss all the action from Matchday 3. So we hope you enjoy your cup weekend off, and we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.